I mean, Saint Germain has been acknowledged as a very great soul that was here.
Yes, many times.
Yes, as well, I can't say how many times. I'm familiar.
Well, I just called to inquire and talk because of our precious time we have right now.
Yes. But one of the men who did a lot of research on Count Saint Germain was Manly P. Hall.
Mm-hmm.
And there's...
Who again?
Manly P. Hall.
Okay.
Manly Hall is...
Has the Philosophical Research Society. Madame Blavatsky and the Secret Doctrine addresses Saint Germain quite frequently.
Let me ask, if I can, just for a second. In the spiritual point, if you say Saint Germain, you state the I Am, and the fact of the reincarnations we talk about, and the woman spoke of it earlier, how many lives do we ask, or do we have? Do we reach a point where we become ascended masters, like Saint Germain is now? Or, again, I don't know for sure.
Yes.
I'm deeply and deep study right this for me to grow right now.
Okay. We are all masters right now. We're just not acting that way.
Right.
All right. We all have the potential to become that. A great adept teacher like Saint Germain or master, whatever name you want to give it. Elizabeth...
Saint Germain, from where you're coming from, maybe this...
There are
ascended
many...
master like Jesus was an ascended master?
Yeah. Let me explain that there have been many great teachers throughout all the civilizations of the earthly existence.
Uh-huh.
Throughout time. There is one book that explains it very thoroughly, if you want to understand it better, called Isis Unveiled. It explains the history of all the world religions. Again, it was written by Blavatsky, and it's the most thorough work I know available on the subject.
What is the name of the book again?
Isis Unveiled.
Okay.
And if you...
Is that like the Unveiled Mysteries?
Yes, it is.
In the I Am Discourses?
No, it is
not. Or something
not.
Different than that?
It has nothing to do with I Am.
Okay.
Isis Unveiled, The Secret Doctrine, and many other works were written by the founder of the Theosophical Movement called Helena Petrovna Blavatsky. And it's a very outstanding work. And it has more insight and in-depth information that's not belonging to any one individual. She doesn't state that these teachings are hers. She just states that she's just recording in an organized way the information that's available for our humanity. She is the one who brought the idea of masters and Mahatmas to the West.
Do we, after we become, say, again, I'm studying this, ascended masters, we don't continue to reincarnate in earthly... beings
okay.
Like we are this way.
Let me explain that. The Buddhists talk about two types of Buddhas, the selfish Buddha and the selfless Buddha.
Right.
All the great teachers that have come, Jesus, Buddha, Krishna, Zoroaster, and all the others, all chose to stay and help humanity.
Right.
All right. A lot of people in the Eastern schools think that the goal is to seek nirvana, indefinite blissful rest. But it isn't an indefinite blissful state. It ends, just like everything else does. So what happens is if you've achieved that pinnacle at your time of evolution, and you are indeed offered the choice, as always, to stay and help humanity, those on the ladder behind you, and be a beacon light for them, or enter this blissful state of rest.
Well, like some of the other people have talked about, other states, other dimensions...
Yes, well, the after-death states or the disembodied states or higher planes of consciousness, whatever name you want to give it.
So do we try to get into that ascended state more perfect in each lifetime?
We enter that ascended state every single night in what's called dreamless sleep. Beyond the dream state is the dreamless sleep state, and at that time we are totally free of our earthly body, unrestricted by our physical brains and minds, and we have the ability to experience the knowledge of the world, of the universe, or unlimited potential. The problem is we have to bring it back through the dream state into the waking state, and usually very few people are able to do that.
Does the Maharishi's transcendental meditation, talk about that deep thought right there?
Well, meditation is an art that is supposed to help you acquire the disciplining of your mind to be able to concentrate, because most people's minds operate by jumping around from thought to thought.
I should acknowledge that.
And the meditation is said that the best meditation is what's known as Raja Yoga, the kingly yoga. And there is a book which many people have read to teach that, but not the one put out by the Hare Krishna people.
Uh-huh.
It is the Bhagavad Gita. It is a story. It is a lesson in Raja Yoga. It talks about all the powers that operate. It can be taken on many levels. It's part of the Mahabharata. And there's a translation done by William Q. Judge from the Sanskrit that doesn't have pictures that gives you the very pure translation which is necessary to help you awaken these abilities within yourself. And if you want a book that will help you meditate or teach you what meditation is,
well,
I recommend that.
I was a student of meditation years ago.
Well, Maharishi, he goes around teaching people to meditate on candles and chant their own special mantra, which isn't very special at all because there's only a few that they use and they just dish them out.
Really?
Yes.
I've always wondered about that. I thought I had the special
mantra. Well, everybody feels that way, but it isn't really true.
Yeah.
And the term transcendental meditation has always existed. The understanding of what it is has existed always, and transcendental is what happens when you meditate. So it bothers me when somebody puts a trademark on the term transcendental meditation and arrests people that come from a culture that have used that term for thousands of years.
Right.
That's been my experience.
Well, that's our humanness, isn't it? You know, we had to put everything in a little
Well,
cubicle.
He became very Americanized.
Right.
And so I think we all have to take our lessons. We can all learn to meditate by reading wonderful books that have been written, and we can all become.
Before you go, can I ask you again for the name of that person? There's no cars now. About 5 minutes ago, we talked to that gentleman.
Which gentleman?
On the book that you...
I told you to, if you wanted to read about different things, to read Isis Unveiled. And it's written...
How do you spell that?
I-S-I-S.
I-S-I-S.
Isis.
Isis.
Okay. Unveiled.
Unveiled. Thank you.
By Blavatsky.
I will do that.
Okay. And then you read the Bhagavad Gita by William Q. Judge.
Okay.
But the secret to meditating, Charles, is to learn how to get quiet and to listen.
Well, that's what it tells you.
I think we always work at that.
That's the most important thing.
Thank you. You set a fine table.
Thank you. I'm glad you came.
I waited many years to call the station, but an avid listener to KBC Talk Radio, and this was the moment that struck me to call.
Well, I'm glad you did, Charles.
Have a fine evening.
You too.
Bye-bye.
I'm Bill Jenkins. With me is Carrie Williams on Talk Radio. How are you, Bill?
Hi. I'm all right. Hi. I have a question about the reincarnation from human to animals or from animals to humans.
That's a very good question.
Because I am a breeder. I'm breeding Siamese cats for years. And some are born unbelievably intelligent since they are thumb size, 3-4 days old. They've developed such strong connection to me, and they just treat me as a mother or like a former relative.
I've always thought cats were human anyway.
Well, the teachings, as I understand it, and the research indicates that once you reach the pinnacle of the form on this planet Earth, which is a human being, it's very hard to regress back into a lesser form, such as an animal. But the people in India try to use that as a threat that if you don't behave, follow the caste system, you will be regressed to a lesser form, such as an animal or a tree.
Like a punishment.
But human beings are the only form that we have on Earth that give us the ability to have free choice, exercise free will, and make a decision. We have mind and higher mind, while animals operate on instinct. They know how to protect themselves, and instinctual things can be passed on from generation to generation among the animal kingdoms. While plants operate on a different principle, they just bend towards light, which is a lesser principle than instinct in an animal and intuition in a human being. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, I had an interesting thing told me by Dr. Peoples, who gets here. Now, I don't know whether he was kidding or not. But he said it very seriously, that in your evolution sometime, your spiritual intelligence, you do need to learn some strange lessons. And in my case, for about 200 years, my spirit invaded a rock where I learned patience.
Yes. Well, it
said... And I can't think of anything that would teach you patience more than being a rock.
According to the secret doctrine, it's been said that we, our consciousness, our individuality, in order to become a human, had to go through the experience of all the other forms of life.
Mm-hmm.
Rock is the mineral kingdom, and we did experience the consciousness of a rock. Plant kingdom, animal kingdom, human.
And when you're here, you're...
You've achieved it all.
You're now on the path toward being godly.
Exactly. We have what's called higher mind, lighting up a manas, that principle that can unite the God principle in us with our mortal form, let's say.
In one sense of the word, you're training the monad.
Exactly.
You are training the monad in those lower forms. Okay, does that help you, Galena?
Yes, and I want to use a chance to say that this third time is the peak of the week for me. And I also tell to all other listeners, they're a really special group of people listening to you, just judging by their questions. And this group has such a strong center as you, Bill. And a really congratulations that we are united very much by you.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. They're the nicest audience in the world, too. They are just kind to me. Hello there. Liz, are you on? Liz, I just punched you in and out, but you're on now. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, I'm on now?
You're in.
Okay. I changed my mind about what I was going to ask you, but first I want to tell like a little story that happened to me that got me interested in reincarnation and in everything. Several years ago, I was reading Ruth Montgomery's book,
yes.
Strangers Among Us.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And when I came to the part where they were talking about Abraham Lincoln being a walk-in, I closed the book, I put it down, I said, I don't think so. I don't think I really believe this. I wasn't sure. So I went into the other room, sat down, turned on the TV, and there was an almanac in front of me. And I just casually flipped it open. And in front of me, in big, bold letters, was the word Lincoln. And I looked down, and it started describing experiences that he had that led up to him seeing double images of himself when he looked in the mirror. And it started kind of all coming together, and I said, this is pretty interesting that I just happened to sit down and open this book after I put the other one down. And so that kind of convinced me that walk-ins could be a possibility.
Well, I think the concept of walk-ins, and you can clarify this if you like, Bill, the way Ruth Montgomery writes about them may not be the way it actually happens. Because being a walk-in means you have let go of your physical body here and an entity has taken over. And usually she says these entities come from other planets.
Really?
Yes.
Because well, I didn't get that impression.
Well, it doesn't matter. But what happens is great beings such as Lincoln and our founding fathers of this country were definitely inspired, were definitely evolved beings.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say inspired, when people meet a great teacher, a great soul, a Mahatma, whatever name you want to give it, an adept, their lives are affected, and they can be communicated with on many levels. It can be visually, I mean, as if the person would appear right in front of you. One of the greater abilities we have is to separate our astral from our physical, and people who are more evolved or have acquired this ability because of their effort have that ability to do that.
That's happened to me when I was younger.
The separation.
Uh-huh.
Yes. When we're young, we're less attached to this physical form.
There are some interesting things that happen here, Liz, and I'm familiar with one case here who is the son of one of our fine executives here at the radio station, that he had a terrible accident and was about, in fact, for all intents and purposes, he was dead. And if he did survive, he would be a vegetable, and it was a very sad situation.
Mm-hmm.
He did recover. He maintains all of the consciousness he had before, but after he recovered, which was rather quickly,
mm-hmm.
he is a totally different,
mm-hmm.
vibrant, energetic, creative person with knowledge and activities and know-how that he did not have
before. And do his parents and friends think that he's a different person altogether?
They asked me about that, and uh-huh. I met the young man, and certainly I am not any kind of a person who could give any valid judgment, but
mm-hmm.
it, let's put it this way. It certainly is a case that should be studied in this
well,
area.
Well, it happened to the co-founder of the Theosophical Movement, William Q. Judge, when he was very young. became quite ill and became a different person.
A
totally different person. And what happens is sometimes the body is sick. It is really finished, and the connection may have been severed. The otic cord, whatever name you want to give that connection between your astral and your physical,
mm-hmm.
which people have seen. Sometimes that body is used by beings who do want to do work, you know, to help humanity.
You maintain the consciousness of the other, but you just take on a whole...
Yes, you remember the details of the
uh-huh.
life, but you're...
I would think the brain would keep the memories. I don't know how you... Memories relate in a physical sense.
Well, that's the
sense,
middle level
but,
of the monad that's
uh-huh.
at work, and so that part stays with you.
One more question. I just had a baby, a little baby boy, and I really would like to get a reading done
mm-hmm.
and find out what our connections have been in past lives. Would you recommend this?
Why do you want to know?
Because I think it would be... There's a reason why we're together.
Okay. As soon as your child can speak, why don't you ask him and see if
uh-huh.
he remembers. And if he remembers, he'll tell you if you're ready to listen.
Uh-huh.
You
would, and you would
rather
have...
than a reading.
That's a very interesting answer.
Okay, Liz?
Thank you very much.
All right. Glad to have you aboard tonight.
Bye.
Goodbye. And we have... Is this Rose?
Yes.
Hi, Rose. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Okay, I'm on now, right?
You're on.
Okay, the lady said... sorry, I forgot your name.
That's okay. It's Carrie Williams.
Carrie, I'm interested in what you're saying. I wasn't thinking about your name. Carrie, you said that energy, this energy that we are has an intelligence. And before we go into another body... this energy, this intelligent energy, you hear of contacts being made to people after someone has died. Is this energy, does it hang around? I mean...
Yes, it does. And
because I've experienced that. I called this program before, but you're the one I should have been talking to.
Oh, thank you.
Yes.
There you go.
Okay. it was an intelligence behind this energy. And
yes.
What I experienced, it was actually an intelligence. It came when I least expected it, and it just spoke to me.
Was it someone that you knew?
My husband.
Okay, obviously.
I remember your call.
Yes.
Well, oftentimes, many people who die suddenly have an immense need to communicate.
Right.
With a loved one that was very near and dear to them,
mm-hmm.
not so much to let them know that something happened to them, but
mm-hmm.
to let them know that they're really okay. What people see as aberrations or ghosts is that leftover energy that hasn't dissipated
mm-hmm.
yet. And in the East, they believe in cremation because it frees the soul from the body quicker. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, people who are very sick and terminally ill.
Mm-hmm.
That are hanging on for life because of their loved ones
we
that they're leaving behind.
Yes.
Always, it's very interesting. I had a friend who was a nurse who did coma research, and patients would wait for her to come on shift to die
mm-hmm.
because she would allow them to die.
Goodness.
And many people keep people alive today by their own will.
We did it for 3 months. He was sick for a year, and it was like he should have been dead 3 months before he died, and on and on and on.
Most people die when their loved ones have left the room,
mm-hmm.
or when they went home for the evening,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, when there's finally a time when they can have a long enough separation that the energy or the will of the people who love them is no longer binding them to their body.
You explained it to A.T.
Thank you. It isn't my personal explanation.
Amazing. Now, one other experience before... Well, this was when my daughter went to conscious, what do you call one of these group things where you
consciousness raising?
Yes. And it wasn't like she was hypnotized, but she was in a meditative state. And she went into this thing where she felt that she was, and I'm going to explain something after this, like in a round red ball. And she was like fighting to get out, and there was smoke. And she's always had, from the time I can remember, a fear of fire. And they had a hard time getting her out of this, and she was just fighting to get out of this round red ball. Well, we were talking about this, and when just about the time when she was conceived, I was living in a little mobile home with my husband, and he had fallen asleep. I didn't know. I was sleeping in a little back area of this mobile home, and I woke up in the middle of the night. The room was loaded with smoke. He had fallen asleep with a cigarette.
Hmm.
By all rights, I feel I should have been asphyxiated. What would have wakened me? Now, I'm wondering if it was like that spirit. She hadn't been born yet. But could that intelligence behind her spirit that had entered at the point of maybe 3 weeks into conception have wakened me?
That's possible, or it could have been your own. When we always have our own higher self or guardian angel or whatever name you want to give it,
uh-huh,
constantly with us.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're awakened. But there's a very interesting film that was out called Audrey Rose that has a very good element of truth in it. It has to do with people who are recalling a past life that was very painful, including the death, because at the end of that movie, the child was reliving her previous life and her previous death,
uh-huh,
Audrey Rose. And in the end, they could not save her. She actually relived her death, even though,
mm-hmm,
she wasn't in the car that was on fire or burning.
Mm-hmm.
But that is the danger of hypnotic regressions,
mm-hmm,
of opening doors when people aren't ready.
Well, we didn't know if it was like a reincarnation-type experience, you know, or something she'd lived before, or was it just a memory somehow of maybe she in the womb was experiencing something that I was going
through.
No
one can tell you except the true person that can read the astral light, and
mm-hmm,
there's so few people that can do that accurately, that just accept that you're all here.
There's a lot of them that think they can.
Yes.
But, you know, you explained it to a T as far as this experience after my husband died.
Thank you. What I've explained is very well written in a very... As I said earlier, in The Secret Doctrine, it's the only set of information I know that has the esoteric understanding of these questions. And, of course, many researchers we have found verify and confirm the information that is written in that body of knowledge.
What is this book?
You can read any book on theosophy. I would recommend starting with a simpler one first, The Ocean of Theosophy, or The Key to Theosophy first. The Secret Doctrine is very hard to understand,
mm-hmm,
but all the information is in both of those books also.
You might try also Carrie's own book.
Yes, you
can
read.
That's what I want to read.
Reincarnation, A New Horizon in Science, Religion, and Society,
mm-hmm,
and Reincarnation, The Phoenix Fire Mystery.
Okay, so Reincarnation and New...
A New Horizon
a
in
new
Science,
horizon.
Religion, and Society.
Well, I
and they're available all over town.
Yes, well, you've impressed me tremendously. Bill, she's one of the best you've had.
Well, thank you. We thought you.
And I do
very,
love
very
your
good.
Show. They're all good, but you're really special.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rose.
Bye bye.
Appreciate your call. And let's see, we have Irma on the line.
Yes. Hi. Good evening, Bill. Is it Carrie?
Yes, it is.
Very nice to talk to both of you. You answered part of my question. That has to do with cremation.
Yes.
Now, when the in your opinion, what is the best method? I understand that cremation is also a form of purification for your soul.
It's a freeing of your connection to the earthly body, which for some people keeps them earthbound for quite a while. It's a setting free of the divine part of you that no longer needs the physical body to exist.
I see. So it is, in essence, a better departing.
Well,
from the third plane, then.
People who have the ability of seeing on the astral plane can go to cemeteries and sometimes see,
mm-hmm,
deceased individuals, their astral body, still hovering near their graves.
The out-of-body travelers,
yes,
see this quite often.
Yes.
Is there a certain period of time that a body...
It depends on how attached the person was to their own life and how hard it was for the family to let them go.
I see.
Their consciousness.
So actually you can set the time that from the time that you depart to the time that you want to be cremated.
You can help a deceased person be free sooner, mm-hmm, and many people have to make arrangements for their own burials or funerals usually before they die. In India, it's a celebration.
Mm-hmm.
When people die, they're celebrating because they're free of this physical body, of these shackles.
And in China, they mourn when you're born.
Yeah.
I have another question that has really been puzzling me because I had a similar experience about 16 years ago. When a person is considered brain dead.
Yes.
Exactly. I had a similar experience about 16, 17 years ago where I was hearing the conversation that I was dying or I was dead.
Yes.
But I was able to see the people that were there.
Yes.
And I was able to hear the conversation.
Exactly.
But it was hard for me to move on my body, and apparently I was just laying there. I couldn't.
Apparently
I couldn't
you
talk.
Were really dead, right? And you weren't in your body, and you could see it and hear the conversation. Sure. Could you see your body?
Yes, I did.
Okay. So you had an out-of-body experience.
Another one with a near-death experience.
But many doctors today will accept that this does happen to people. And they think you're brain dead because their electroencephalogram little bleeps don't function right. But until that cord that connects you, your physical and astral together, is severed, you can come back to life. And in our book, we talk about many cases, one person who was pronounced dead for 9 minutes. It's an extraordinary length of time, and he was not brain damaged at all. And with the condition that he died from, pneumonia, a very toxic condition, you'd think that there would have been some sort of brain damage. So this confirms the understanding that as long as that thread, the otic cord or the silver thread, even Jesus talks about it in the Bible, is still intact, you can come back to life.
Does that help you, Irma?
It helps.
And that can't be measured.
It helps me. The thing that I know I didn't feel anything. Mm-hmm. I just saw them and I heard them. But some of these people...
That happens quite often.
Do they feel, or can they...
They can't feel, they can't move their body because they're not in it. They can't feel because the sense of touch is a physical sensation. But the seeing and the hearing is a more refined sense.
I see.
That belongs to the astral man or the ethereal man.
I see. Well, you really have helped me, and I really appreciate... you being there. And
thank
also,
you.
Bill, I really appreciate you being there because I think we need to explore more on this field. And I'm really excited. And I wish you had a longer program.
Thank you, Irma.
Thank you so much and good night.
Good night.
And in just a moment, we want to talk to Carrie about suicide.
Yes, it is.
Why?
Especially among young children today. What's really amazing is the elementary school age children that are taking their lives. And the basic reason is, as to many psychologists now believe in psychiatrists, that it's due to a fear of nothingness. There's no meaning to their lives. And it has reached epidemic proportions. It's growing in leaps and bounds. And it is now known that people who are attempting suicide, that suicide is indeed, as Mary Sue Miller said, a cry for help. That people who are wanting to commit suicide really do not want to end their life. They really want to be helped. And as I was saying earlier to Rose, that one of the cases we cited in our book is a Sergeant George Ritchie, who did indeed write his own book, Return from Tomorrow, who was pronounced dead for 9 minutes while he was in the military, who had died of pneumonia. He experienced, while he was in his... let's say, out-of-body state, and in which everyone indeed thought he was dead, different planes of existence. He was taken on a celestial tour in which he got to see different states or planes of existence in the after-death states or on the ethereal planes. One of the planes he saw were these entities or beings that he saw were very sad that were trying to communicate with people on Earth. They were actually seeing their loved ones that were left behind. One child is begging to his mother and father, please don't be sad. I'm sorry for what I did. Now, can you imagine the torment of a child who took his life, sees the suffering that he left behind, and cannot escape that until the time that his normal death would have occurred? And when I say normal, I mean the time that all his energy for living had been used up. And because of this experience in this book by Sergeant George Ritchie, many people who have committed suicide or attempted suicide have agreed, and we do cite some of this information, that suicide is not a solution. That the anxiety and the torment and the anguish and the suffering that led you to choose the act of killing yourself, you relive again over and over and over again like a broken record. And it's endless until the time of your normal, natural death will occur. And to me,
there's no future.
There's no solution in suicide. It's worse than staying here and working it out.
Very well put. Very well put. That's the worst thing to do.
Yes.
The agony will be greater than what you think you're experiencing now.
The only place to work it out is here.
Here.
And you need the body to do it.
Thank you, Carrie Williams, for joining us. Your book,
Thank
Reincarnation,
you.
A New Horizon in Science, Religion, and Society. Get it. Next week, a special treat for you. So you join me there. I'm Bill Jacobs.